The WLEW News and Public Affairs Department now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. It is currently about 10 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Our guest today on the program, our state representative, Terry Brown. He's in Lansing and was nice enough to spend some time with us this morning, give us a little lowdown of what's going on in the state capitol. Thanks for being with us, Terry.
Hey, thank you, Craig. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Lansing, have you got your sea legs back? Or you know where everything is again?
Well, it was almost too quick of a transition. I had a very nice welcome here. Folks on both sides of the aisle have been very gracious to me, welcoming me back. It's an interesting place, and, you know, some things are very much the same, and some things are very different since I've been here. But actually, I've been honored to be able to be back here and accepted very well. I think part of it is, Craig, you know, when you lose an election like I lost, there was kind of eulogizing going on of me. And so I come back, and then there's this legend of Terry Brown that I don't know if I can live up to. So, you know, it's kind of like when somebody... You think they died, and then you find out, oh, they never really died when you see them, and, well, now what do you say? You know, so that's kind of the welcome I've gotten. It's pretty interesting. With the term-limited legislature, a lot of folks come to me because I'm the one who was here 8 years ago when nobody else was. So, you know, it's an interesting thing when I'm looked to as a voice of experience when, you know, this is actually just my fifth year in here, but it's been a good transition.
It's been a busy year so far. Lawmakers got back to Lansing, noticed the water levels, and right away got to work on finding some funding for dredging. It didn't sound like the federal agencies, the Army Corps of Engineers, were going to do anything for recreational harbors, so the state stepped up.
Yeah, it's, you know, that was a really critical thing to happen, and I landed in some good spots. Just to let you know, the committees, I'm on the Appropriations Committee, and the subcommittees included education, agriculture, and I'm also on natural resources. And I think they're perfect committees for our district and for our area, and really hot areas as far as topics in the state. And so the first thing that I was confronted with in committee is, can we come up with the funds for dredging? And I remember I had a meeting over at Caseville very early on after my election, a week or two into January. We met there, and I said, the state rarely works quick enough for our sake. And we're hoping to get dredging started, you know, already like right now. And I just said, I just don't know how the state can work this quick. But we kind of all put our shoulders to the task, and I can say that John Bumstead, who's the chair of the subcommittee for natural resources on appropriation side, has worked very well with the governor's office, with the DNR and other groups, and DEQ, and we've been able to get that passed through the legislature. So I'm thrilled with it. It's coming back home, and you know, this means a big deal to Harbor Beach and Port Austin and Caseville. These were areas that certainly we needed. Well, we've also got Sebring and Quantico Sea that now are going to be dredged. And so I'm just really thrilled that we've been able to make these things happen.
Has it gone through the whole process? Is the process of approving it, and then you have to go into appropriations and actually get the money? Is all of that taken care of at this point?
Appropriations, it's, you know, that's one of the areas that I think there's pretty broad agreement. Tomorrow, well, we were anticipating that tomorrow would be a long day. It's gone through our committee, our subcommittee, and it's gone through the full committee, where it gets put into an omnibus bill, and then we anticipated those bills would hit the floor tomorrow in the House of Representatives. And actually, the leadership has said it's probably next Tuesday and Wednesday that we're going to deal with those. So part of that money is there because it was in the Waterways Commission. Part of the funding is there because it was a supplemental to the current year's budget. So I think we've got enough that I mean, notices have already gone out of approval, so things are going to start. I was talking to some folks back home here just on Friday this weekend. I was in Harbor Beach, and they've gotten notices that, you know, their permitting has been approved now, and that means things can move relatively quick. And that was another part of it, was just getting the permitting to do this. Sometimes that takes a great deal of time to go through that process, but things are moving remarkably quick.
Now, this takes care of this year. Are there plans? Are there committees working on finding some sort of long-term funding for dredging? Because it doesn't sound like next year is going to be any better from the feds.
Yeah, Craig, these are these emergency situations we have to do right now. I think we're looking at long-term. I think we're looking at working more and putting more pressure on the feds to come out with this. There's two things that we need to consider. I mean, one is, we've got lake levels that are at historic lows, have been at historic lows, maybe a little better just the last couple of weeks, but we don't see great improvements in the near future. It takes a long time to fill these lakes up. And so, yeah, we're going to be confronted with that. Now, a lot of the issues that we have with these are either issues of the channels actually filling up, either by drift out in the bay, kind of like we get with snowbanks, you know, filling in the ditches, you know, that sort of thing. The other thing is we run a lot of silt through our river systems in our ditches, and you know, many places the rivers end up in the harbors. So I was in Catesville the other day looking at how fast the water was coming down that river. That water is not just water, it's also tree limbs and what have you, and silt and some farmers' precious topsoil. So I think the other part of what we're looking at is trying to prevent this silt, you know, reoccurrence, is looking at, are we using good management skills as far as filter strips and other things along the rivers themselves, so that the soil stays where it needs to be, and that's on somebody's field, instead of you know, getting dredged out of a harbor somewhere. So I think we have to work on those two things. And yeah, there is talk there, but honestly, right now, I think the legislature is looking at how do we get through this budget that's right before us at this point. So that's what departments are working on right now, is trying to figure out what long-term strategies we have to help get us through this.
Is it difficult dealing, you know, most, you know, we think of harbors, we think of municipal harbors, but there's also marinas out there that are private and have the same problem.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the reasons, there's several reasons we needed to move quickly on this dredging project. I mean, one is we need boats in right away. That means lots of jobs. Another is, if you dredge too late, you're right in the middle of spawning seasons and other things, and you're affecting habitat. So we wanted to do as much we could to avoid that. But the other thing, we wanted to be able to have access in Michigan to actually the dredging equipment. And we're not the only part of the United States that are facing these things. The Mississippi River has huge issues with trafficking even their barges and let alone recreational vehicles up and down the Mississippi River and their harbors, and so they need dredging. So Michigan said, let's do all of this at once so that we can actually make sure that the dredging equipment is in our area. One of the keys to what we've done also is many of those private marinas are sitting on public harbors, and so or adjacent to them. And even if they're not, if they're a few miles away, the equipment is nearby. And so a big part of the cost of dredging is even getting the equipment to your marina. And so that in itself helps reduce it. There have been some suggestions of loans and other tax easing, I guess, for some private harbors. Those are still working their way through the process. I think most of those have started in the Senate, but they haven't come before us yet. But those are the kind of things that we're thinking that that can help the private marinas also.
We don't want to just talk about dredging. There's other things going on. You mentioned the budget. Is that process a whole lot different than the last time you were in Lansing? As I remember it, in those days, it usually went down to the wire.
It is, Craig. Now, remember what's changed here. We have a legislature and a governor that are all Republican, all the same party. So typically what we've done, I don't know if it's been forever in Michigan, but each appropriation bill goes separately through the legislature. And then, you know, if it originates in the House, it goes through subcommittees to committee, to the full House floor. The Senate is doing a duplicate process. And then if there are disagreements, we get into conference committees and resolve those disagreements before they go back to each of our bodies. When I was here last, we had a Democratic House and a Republican Senate. And so there were differences. Everything that became law the last time I was here was bipartisan, because nothing could pass unless you had Republicans in the Senate that agreed with it and Democrats in the House that agreed with it. Otherwise, nothing would have passed. Now, things pass without all of that. But what they've done that changes things a little bit is now we put things in omnibus bills. So when I was here last, the School Aid Committee was a standalone committee. I had chaired the school aid budget, the Department of Ed budget, and I was vice chair in judiciary budget. And those three were separate ones that we dealt with separately. Now what we've done in the state is we put them in omnibus budgets. And so school aid is combined with community colleges and higher ed with universities. So we have those three budgets that go through together. And then all of the other general fund budgets are included in one big budget bill. And so there are things that people love in these budgets and things that they hate. And so the balance is you have to take that vote based on kind of this smell test. Can I really do this? You know, does it come far enough my way? Which you can do when you're all in one party. And it gets much more difficult if there are differences of ideas. So that's kind of where it's changed. I know that last week we had 59, the Democrats had 59 amendments that we had suggested for the general fund budget, and none of those amendments passed. And so it looks very partisan in nature. However, I can say on the budgets that I worked on with my chairs and my subcommittees, I think we had some influence, maybe not a great deal influence, but some influence before things even got to the full appropriations. So that's where a lot of the work is being done. And on the floor, things will probably pass or fail primarily on partisan basis, is my guess, but we'll see what happens.
Once the budget is taken care of, what do you see as the issues the legislature is going to tackle yet this year?
Well, it's amazing the things that we're faced with. One of the things that keeps hitting us, and it's a budget issue, and I don't know if it's going to come up, this budget issue, is the condition of our roads. We understand for a good business climate, for a good recreational climate, and just for the sheer nature of this state, we need good roads. The question is, where does the funding come from for those roads? And I think we're all in agreement that we need them, but the disagreement comes, whose burden should that be? And is this the time that we can commit all that money? And then further, and this is probably getting more to your point about what other issue is there, there's a fear among many of us that even if we find the monies for the roads, and as we find the monies, because I'm sure at some point we're going to be finding more monies for the roads. You just can't keep going the way you are. But I'm pretty jealous about my area. And if we're going to find ways to get revenue for roads, that revenue needs to be also spent in my area. And there is an effort afoot out there that says, the counties can raise their own money for roads in their areas, and we'll just take this money and use it for state transportation things where we choose to use it. And I'm afraid counties like Huron and Tuscola, Sanilac, will be left out of that, and I don't want to see that happen. So that's one of the balancing acts as we go forward, even with the finding the revenue for roads, is what, you know, are they going to change the formula for how that revenue is distributed? And I'm very concerned about that. So that's a big issue. Education, Craig, continues to be...
Before we get on to education, isn't there a, you know, a part of the proposal there, though, naming a committee Metro to decide how this money is going to be spent, which kind of takes rural right out of it?
Well, yeah, that's my concern. Yeah, it's actually under Act 51, and there is right now a formula that says how is this going to be spent. And this is an interesting place, and I dealt with it the last time I was here. You think you have good resolution. We had a resolution for the Canadian trash a few years ago, and maybe naively on my part, I thought, this kind of makes sense. We raise the tipping fee just by a little and actually can offset that with local municipalities, counties, and townships to help offset that bill. And right away, folks looked at this as, oh, this is a new revenue source. And so the pie that we had not even created already started getting sliced up and actually blew the deal before we could get it done. And so that's kind of the thing with the road funding. One of the things that came out of this is, ooh, this could be new money, and folks are already fighting over where that new money goes. And so it almost blows up the deal before it's done. So that's the concern, is how do we have a fair process that's set in place so that rural and urban and suburban kind of entities and state expressways and others, there's a fair process to be able to make sure that the taxpayers from Huron and the Thumb area aren't just paying for somebody else's new roads in another part of the state.
Yeah. Let's get back to education. I know that is one of your key things. You've been in education, you know, working in other, when you weren't a representative and such, and it's a passion of yours. What do you see coming in education this year?
Well, you know, there is a lot of talk about what we do with curriculum, and how do you balance local control versus state control? Right now, I don't see a way out. I mean, this is intertwined with budget, and we have funding issues that all of our districts are facing and are going to continue to face. So the question that I have is, we continue to put roadblocks up for schools with accountability measures that we're taking money that should be spent in classroom and putting it on these accountability procedures, while at the same time removing obstacles from maybe public or private entities that are using public funds. Now you say, well, how can that happen? Well, you know, in Michigan, there's a push. There's many that are saying, hey, we need to consolidate small schools. However, we've created over 500 new schools in Michigan in just the last few years, and those are public charter schools. And they play by a different game. A couple weeks ago, we voted on the Educational Achievement Authority, which says we're going to take the schools that are failing students the most and do something different with them. With all of us agree that we need to do that. Well, they started it last year with 15 schools out of the Detroit area that were the most failing schools, but they used a process that we don't have a lot of confidence in because it's never been tested. And so I don't think our kids can be just experiments. Now, a couple weeks ago, the legislature, against opposition from myself, against opposition from some members on the Republican side, have expanded that to, I think, 50 different schools in Michigan, which seems like, that shouldn't be bad, but we just don't know how it's going to work and how much money is being spent that now we've created a new system. Instead of going through state superintendent or school board, the state is getting in deeper and hiring a chancellor that will be making, I think, some pretty good money to operate this new system of schools. And so we have some concerns about that, and that points to who should be in control of our schools. So I think that's going to be the question that's going to come up. Who's going to control the curriculum of our schools? How much say do local boards, local residents have in that? And then how do we prepare students? And this is the major question that we need to deal with. How do we prepare our students for jobs of the future that, honestly, we can't hardly even predict ourselves right now? I'll say, I spoke yesterday. We had the Monday in Bad Axe, we had the Pinwheel Garden for the prevention of abuse and neglect, child abuse and neglect. And yesterday we had a similar event here, and I spoke on the Capitol steps to a group and said, our children are our greatest treasure, and I really, really believe that. And we need to do everything we can protect them and prepare them for the future in ways that the dreams that they have now can become reality sometime. And I don't think there's anything more powerful as far as an economic driver than a good education for students. It's the one way that I've seen people break out of poverty, by having a good education. And how do we have access to that? So that is a passion, Craig, and that's something I think we continue to work on.
Okay. When you mentioned 15 and then 50 schools, those are individual school buildings. They're not districts. They're individual buildings?
Those are buildings. Yes, those are buildings, individual buildings.
So it would be like a high school. It would be a junior high, not 50 districts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Yep, that's correct.
Because, you know, people hear the term and then they're thinking, 50 schools, that's a lot.
No, I'm glad you clarified it. No, it's buildings. Now, some of those range, those could be small buildings or could be large buildings. And we are very fortunate here to have very, very good schools. But the metrics change all the time. And especially in a smaller school, you can have a difference of a class with just a few students in it that make your scores go way up or way down. So, you know, all of us need to be, you know, concerned about that, and I'll have to tell you, the expectations that we have for students are so far greater than what most of us know, and unless you've been trying to help your fifth grader in math, you don't realize what they're confronted with. We put out a very good product, and one of the expectations that I have and one of the hopes that I have is that we can make sure that we have opportunities back home, that we attract those students back home after they've done university or technical schools or whatever, that we find a way to employ them at home. And so I think this, you know, making sure we provide a good education is step one to making sure that our area remains economically viable, that people can live and work and recreate here and have the opportunities that I've had growing up.
That's been one of the problems schools have been facing, is kids move away and then the families move away and their numbers go down and their funding goes down. When Proposal A was set up, you know, it was set up during a time when valuations were always going up and such. This turnaround kind of came out of left field for them, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a huge, you know, issue. And demographically, we've changed. I mean, the way we do business has changed. It used to be you drive a quarter mile down a road, and it was Uncle Jim's house or Brother Sam's house, you know, and there were these houses because even the way we did agriculture here required a lot of people. It doesn't require as many, you know, hands on deck right now as it used to. We've taken advantage of technology. We were among the first areas in Huron and Tuscola because of our distance away from automobile assembly plants that were affected, as you recall, by outsourcing and by the hits to manufacturing. A lot of our suppliers were having a great deal of difficulty surviving, so because we're an hour and a half away from those facilities, we were kind of the first ones to go. And so we've had to kind of learn to how to scrape and find ways to re-energize. I'm happy to say that we've got, from my efforts last time here, we've got U of M and Michigan State and Saginaw Valley working together with some things with agriculture, that soon you're going to have students that are going to be able to take agriculture classes at Saginaw Valley that can automatically transfer to Michigan State. Vice versa, but you could get an associate's degree or a minor in agriculture right here from Saginaw Valley, and I've got businesses in the agribusiness field that are very excited about that, and even fields we don't think of, banking. You know, imagine that, getting a finance degree and a second minor in agriculture. That's important. We also have a new industry as far as, you know, in our area, as far as the technologies of agriculture. It's not just farming anymore. It's about creating and growing things differently and processing. So one of the things that we're working on in agriculture right now is how do we encourage the development of processing facilities in Michigan to give extra value to the products that we're growing right here. So that's one of the things I think, Craig, over the next year and a half, you're going to be hearing a lot more about, is how do we get those things to happen here. And I've been working with the MEDC at the state level here in saying, when you give incentives for job creation, for businesses to come in with job creation, don't just think about 150 jobs or more. Think about the 15 to 25 job range. That's what we need to bring into the thumb area. And don't just say, no, you won't listen to us or help us. We, you know, the backbone of Michigan's jobs are coming from small businesses and entrepreneurs. That's where most of the jobs happen. So how do we give support and relief to that truly small businessman who might hire 7 or 10 or 15 or 25 people, and how do we give incentives to grow that market? That's going to help our area.
Terrific. Anything you want to mention before you have to close this out? I know you had an appointment coming up.
Yeah, I do have an appointment, but Craig, one of the things I think you're going to be seeing also is a restructuring of hunting and fishing licenses. And the work that we're doing on that, I'm encouraged by it. It's going to simplify it, bringing it down to a few licenses, possibilities from hundreds. I think it's going to make sense. The sportsmen's groups are excited about that. So we've been working on that. Trails, the governor wants to make Michigan the trail state. We're working on making that happen. We'd like to start that in places like the Verona State Game Area. We have lots of state land over in Tuscola County as well. How do we utilize that? How do we get people here to recreate in our area? If you come in on a bicycle, or if you go out on a canoe or kayak in this area, people come here. They don't need to bring a lot. It's close to home, and they go back a little lighter because they've left some of their money in the area. Those are the things that I'm excited about, making sure that that we have a place at that table, and so we're going to continue to work on those issues too. So those are kind of some of the hot topics right now, and I'd love to talk to you some more about that as we get time.
We will look forward to having you on the program again in the future sometime, Terry.
Thanks, Craig.
I appreciate you taking the time today, and I'll let you get to your appointment. Our guest today on the program has been State Representative Terry Brown in Lansing. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.